have police photographing our license plates.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando, your host, and my guest today is the producer and writer of Delusions of Guinevere, Joanna Bowser. Joanna, how are you today?
I'm good.
Delusions of Guinevere is about a 90-minute film. It touches on a lot of relationship issues, and, well, I don't want to give away too much, but as we talk, you'll reveal what you want. I certainly don't want to give away that incredible ending. But, Joanna, at a time where women are still fighting to get an equal voice in society, for that matter, equal pay, but certainly an equal voice in filmmaking, especially behind the camera as a director or producer. Things change since Pickford?
I think that the challenge is, while the rise of independent film and the difference of cameras and the ability to be able to shoot and edit a film, a high-quality film on a very reasonable budget, has allowed for more voices to come into the arena, there's still a massive gap between women behind the camera and female producers being able to get their work in front of a large audience.
Yes.
I don't know that things have definitely gotten better, mostly because I believe women are kind of grabbing a bull by the horns and making their own projects happen.
Yes.
So has the doors to Hollywood really opened wide for women behind the camera, or in many cases even in front of the camera in the great leading roles? It's gotten better, but we still have a long way to go in that respect.
You know, sure. I wonder if people realize that it didn't start out that way, actually. When movies literally began silent era, any and everybody did a job that they could do. It didn't matter what your age was or your gender. I mean, women directed back in silent movies and owned their own movie companies. But then something happened, and the something, as always, is the money. When talkies came along, movies became a business, and of course, men didn't feel that women could run a business, and hence all those stereotypes of on-screen. And
right.
So, you know, we all know the story of Mary Pickford and United Artists, but women now still are fighting to get, even as you say, on camera, strong female characters. And initially, to just stay in the business, they turned to writing and to editing because they could no longer direct. But you have directed, written, and produced. And this is, you're working under Buddha Belly Productions. Is that the production company name?
Absolutely. On this film, it is produced by a company called Buddha Belly Productions, which Ariana Bernstein, who is another female producer here in New York City, where we're based, has created specifically to focus on films that tell stories with great social impact.
Uh-huh.
And she's highly interested in the conversation around women in film. She and I are both really interested in telling great stories and bringing on the right people to tell those stories, regardless of gender.
Uh-huh.
And just having gone through this process and worked in film for the past 5 years, seeing that there are so many amazing storytellers who happen to be female.
Yes.
That aren't getting an opportunity for their voices to really be heard, mm-hmm. aren't getting the funding that can really push their careers forward and making these bigger films, and aren't getting the directing opportunities from Hollywood that many younger male directors are. That's kind of been something that become a forefront issue for us as we've gone through this process and really faced it and seen it mm-hmm. as we've taken this film and other films out into the world.
Yes. Well, an extra layer of challenge, if you will, is to make an indie film, regardless of whether you're a man or a woman. But I guess that's just another hurdle for women to accomplish, an indie film, and to produce, direct, as well as write. Have you run into that?
Yeah, I mean, independent film, there's a vibrant independent film community in New York City, as there are in many other areas in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Austin, as an example, Seattle, Portland.
Yes.
These communities that really rally around different filmmakers come together to help one filmmaker push their project forward, and then that same crew rally behind another filmmaker to push a project forward. And so in that respect, independent film is a wonderful playground for these new voices like myself to really stretch our legs and make bold choices and make these bold endings like you alluded to mm-hmm. that happen in one of your versus the typical Hollywood ending.
Yes.
And that's the joys and the benefit of independent film. But the challenge is independent film as an industry, even though it truly is kind of the eighth studio in the system, in the filmmaking system, it's very, it's an industry that has a reputation for having very low return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about financing and exploring ways to really get your film produced financially, it becomes even more difficult because the burden of, we want to make our investors' money back. We want to have these films be financially successful as they are creatively successful and critically successful. And that is a gap that we're still working to bridge there. And as I mentioned earlier, with the rising of the digital cameras and the easier shooting styles
yes.
that come with those, they're lighter, they're more efficient, you can shoot more faster, you don't have to pay for film or developing film. That has definitely aided the process, but there's still a gap as far as showing that the bulk of independently produced films and content can really be financially viable.
Yes.
That's something that the whole industry is still struggling, and especially around now projects that are directed by women or about women,
mm-hmm.
Proving that they can make money. They
yes.
can actually recoup their investment and reach an audience that's out there.
You know, you would think that with women making up more than 50% of the American population, that it would occur to men that strong female characters would have appeal to the public. I mean, I loved Thelma and Louise, and so many after that, for that matter, 9 to 5, with strong female characters. And it just is disappointing that that's still such an uphill struggle. What about, you know, when I was growing up, I loved movies and directed a lot of plays about the business itself of making movies and producing a play. That was always exciting to me. So I sort of looked at Delusions of Guinevere as that's what that was going to be. And it is that, but it's so much more. How much of the character, the Guinevere character, reflects your fight for equality for women in film?
Well, there's a lot of the character of Guinevere that is in me as one of the writers on the film and as the director and one of the producers. There's a lot of it that are in all of the creative team as far as just kind of the fight. And for me, the film explores this quest of fame versus creative artistic fulfillment and
mm-hmm.
success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I continue to dance between words. Like, I really want to be recognized for my work.
Yes.
I would not be being truthful with you if I didn't say that I would want to win one of those big awards and like have people say, Joanna Balver, like, you do good work.
Of course.
And then there's also this part of, I can put work up. I can produce. I'm a theater director as well and a
yes.
playwright.
Yes.
And I can produce independent films forever.
Yes.
And have the experience of being artistically fulfilled through telling a great story.
Yes.
Whether or not it gets to 10 people and impacts 10 people, or it impacts 10 million people. So it's really a dance. I mean, it's really interesting to be torn as an artist between wanting that recognition, but then wanting to just keep producing great work.
Well, and
not selling out my great work in order to get recognition or get bigger jobs. Because that's the other challenge, is like, okay, well, how commercial in quotations do I want to go? Like, to what extent do I maybe compromise my storytelling a little bit to become more commercially viable, or do I do that? And so that's something that I really identified with through Guinevere's struggle in the
yes.
film, and through her journey.
Yes.
As the story unfolds, absolutely.
Well, she certainly, as you say, she makes that journey. She makes her own choices. She has to live with them, as do we all. But I hear what you're saying, and I wonder, you know, everyone wants, as you say, it's our first goal as creative artists is to make great work. That's what it should be, and
mm-hmm.
and for us purists, it is that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm from New York, too, and we New Yorkers know it is a business, and you do have to sell it. I guess one of the first steps even is getting a distributor. Does Delusions of Guinevere have a distributor?
We do. We're partnered with a company called Indie Rights to distribute the movie.
Very good.
And they're a wonderful company that is really committed to the indie spirit and the new ways of distributing a film. It's not just about throwing it in the theater and inviting people to come,
uh-huh.
but it's really reaching out and grabbing that audience where they live online.
Yes.
Which, given the way the Delusions of Guinevere and Guinevere's journey unfolds, is incredibly important to us.
Yes.
Because she becomes famous through this YouTube channel that she creates.
Yes.
So we really appreciate their philosophy when it comes to audience building and really showing the film in the place where people live, online or in the theater, if that makes sense, or in another live event experience. And so they're really a wonderful partner for bringing this film to market.
Excellent. It certainly is a changing landscape. And in that sense, I think it's maybe not perfect timing, but it's a good time for independent films and for women producing and writing and directing independent films to make their move, as you say, with the digital cameras making things a lot easier to shoot, and their YouTube, of course, and streaming, you know, and binge watching and watching things online. It's perhaps we found our era for women to be recognized as equal creators in film. Is that too optimistic, do you think?
I love that idea. I think that with the distribution channel opening up, as far as being able to directly reach your audience, has provided any filmmaker is the ability to go out and find that target market, find
yes.
that niche for your film, and touch them directly. And you're not relying on an aggressive, expensive advertising campaign to drive them into the theater.
Yes.
Because when you do that, that's when the revenue model gets a little wacky,
exactly.
right? That's where the expenses come in, and where recouping is very important. And I'm not saying that women can't direct a major motion picture for Hollywood and they drive audience to the theater and recoup their money.
Uh-huh.
What I am saying is that because there's so many more pipes to reach the audience, so many more avenues to do that, you can do it more cost efficiently, and you can produce more work without having to raise just
more money.
Amount of money.
Yes.
And you can build that audience over time. And that's something that some of my colleagues and friends in the industry, we do panels about women in film, and we have monthly gatherings to really talk about how can we support women filmmakers to really push everybody's career forward. And that's something that we talk about, whereas you as a director, whether you're a female or a male, but as an indie film director,
mm-hmm.
you can be generating an audience around your work.
Yes.
And creating a following for your style, your work, so that when you have another film come out, you've already got this audience in place that you can reach. You don't have to recreate the wheel every time you're bringing a film to market.
Yes.
And that's another thing that this kind of new distribution model has provided us. And it's really... I always make this joke that distributing a film is easy because there's many places to put your film out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the marketing and the audience development that's the hard part.
Yes.
And that's something that with tools like Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and all these other places where people aggregate online, that's also been made easier if you're willing to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that this kind of new world, if you will, this new experience online has provided a lot of independent filmmakers, and especially women, because it breaks that barrier down with a hammer.
Absolutely.
If they're willing to go out there and do that.
Since you've mentioned these panels that you hold, tell us a bit about that, how people can, how they can get in touch or follow online, or how do women who are out there who want to make good films benefit from the panels that you hold if they're not in New York?
Sure. So there's a group of us that came together. There's a filmmaker in Boston named Lauren Tracy, who has a really great company called X Factor Filmmakers.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
A woman in San Francisco named Dorothy Taylor, who has a company that she's starting called LadyCon.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And another couple of friends that are in L.A. and in Dallas and in Boston, already said, and then in New York. And we came together around the Tribeca Film Festival last year and held this kind of big conversation with about 60 women in the industry about,
wow,
what can we do on a regular basis to support women filmmakers and really elevate the conversation and get men involved in all of these things. And what's come out of it is, in each city, or as in New York, there's actually multiple ones that will be developed, is monthly meetings where it's between 5 and 10 people coming together to talk about their goals, talk about how we can support each other, and then creating this web of support for women creators and filmmakers in the industry. And the best way for people to get involved right now is they can actually, we have an email address set up called theladycon@gmail.com.
Say that again. Are you saying the or Z?
THD.
Okay.
Yeah, theladycon@gmail.com.
Oh.
And anybody that's listening that's interested in participating and or hosting can actually email that. And one of the three of us that started it will get back and set up a phone call to talk about how we can support this coming to another city. So if there's a filmmaker in Portland listening and they want to start one for women filmmakers in their area, we actually provide support in doing that. So it becomes very localized.
And
it really sees that revolution in the film industry.
Well, that is definitely, Joanna, that is definitely changing the landscape. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
And wow.
Thank you.
That is an amazing contribution. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the rewards then. That must, for all the challenges, it must feel so good when you hear from these women and these mm-hmm. panels, all interconnected at one point, one way or another. As many have said before, it takes a village to change the world, and
exactly.
you are creating through your panels these different villages all around the country. That is so fantastic. I'm happy to hear about that. Give us that email address just one more time.
Sure, it's theladycon, LadyCon @gmail.com.
Very good. All right. I'm sitting here, I'm being so impressed. I really enjoy that when I get to enjoy the conversation in an interview
mm-hmm.
and not just ask questions. But what are some of the challenges you warn new filmmakers about?
It's one of those things where when I'm talking to a young filmmaker, and whether they're male or female, and they're just wondering, how do I get my film off the ground? How do I move it forward?
Yes.
There's a couple of things that I say. The first is, take everybody's feedback with a grain of salt.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because you're going to get a lot of opinions as you run your film through the gauntlet, whether you're trying to raise money or you're just getting feedback on your script or you're looking for cast. A lot of people are going to provide their opinions, and absolutely have your ears open and listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But don't lose sight of what your vision is and what your goal is for the film.
Fantastic. I'm going to interrupt you right there. Hold that thought. We must go to a break, but we will continue our conversation with producer, director, and writer Joanna Bowser of Delusions of Guinevere. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. A diving bell must be terribly claustrophobic, locked into a sphere, isolated in a tightly bound universe. The opposite of a butterfly sensuously sampling all that the world can offer, discovering new life on every breeze. The Diving Bell and the Butterfly is the true story of Jean-Dominique Bauby, the successful editor of Elle magazine, who suffered a stroke which left him completely paralyzed except for his left eye. Triumphantly, the film is based upon Bobby's own book, which he wrote by painstakingly blinking his eye in a specially developed code. This could easily have been a depressing and claustrophobic film. Instead, the great American painter and director Julian Schnabel has created an award-winning work of art that reveals a very full life and an active mind. Bobby's ordeal triumphantly affirms the human spirit and the richness of our existence, expressed in family, love, lust, beauty, emotion, and terror. Many reviewers have declared The Diving Bell and The Butterfly to be cinema as it should be. But perhaps that isn't right. It's a singular project, one of a kind, a small masterpiece, and if you trust it, as with any work of art, it will gift you with a universe that will exhilarate, transcend, and long remain with you.
Indie Film Minute, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, where I am talking with the producer, director, and writer of Delusions of Guinevere, Joanna Bowser. And she was telling me in the last segment about panel groups that she's putting together for both men and women, it seems, filmmakers who are trying to launch their films, indie films, many of the times through the digital world, YouTube, etc., which correlates with her lead character, Guinevere's journey. But we were just answering one of those all-important questions. How do you advise new filmmakers, regardless of their gender, of what they need to face? Joanna, you were saying that listen to all the advice, but remember who you are.
Right. Yeah, that's probably the most important. And then another probably equally as important piece is to understand what your goal is with the project.
Mm-hmm.
Really get clear for yourself what the goal is. Is it to take it to festivals and work the festival circuit? Is it to raise your profile as a director online or a filmmaker online?
Mm.
Is it to make your first really big film for $1 million?
Mm.
What is your goal?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you are taking it out and talking to people, if you really understand what that is, then you can really cut through the advice and the opinions that you're getting.
Uh-huh.
Because you can keep going back to, this is the goal. This is what we want to do with this.
Yes.
And sometimes the project can get out of hand if the filmmaker is not really grounded in that. They didn't want to make a really big film, but they ended up making a really big film because of that was the advice. But they just wanted to cut their teeth on a short.
Uh-huh.
And so, again, just really understanding that, I think, is another very important thing for young filmmakers to keep in mind. And then the last piece that I really try to impart on young filmmakers is just make sure you have a great team.
Yes.
And that you like your team.
Yes.
Because you're going to be working with your team, especially your producer team,
mm-hmm.
on a feature for between 1 year and 5 years. So you really want to make sure that you look at it as a long-term relationship.
Yes.
We make jokes. Some of my friends who produce together, and I make jokes that it's when we embark on a feature film, it's like getting married.
Yes.
Okay, are we like, do we want to get married? You know, do we do our contract? Do we sign our prenup? You know.
Do we even want to date?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important thing, especially if you're talking about working with friends.
Yes.
To really be clear about that and really understand that, because there will be a point in the process where it looks like things might fall apart, and you want to understand that the people you are with are people that you want to go into the trenches with and really make magic with.
Yes.
And it's not just something that seems fun right now. And I'm not trying to deter people from going out and making that 48-hour film festival short or doing something more quickly. But when you're talking about a feature like Delusions of Guinevere, it's a long process. Ariana, the other producer, and I have been working together on the film since, I think, July
yes.
of 2011.
Wow.
So we're, you know, 3 years and 1 month in, And it's been like we've experienced the ebbs and flows and ups and downs of any relationship.
Sure.
Like relationships you would have in your life, and so it's, and we are much stronger for it, and we're still, and we're a great team. So we had to learn that, you know, as we went along, and it was because we were willing to do that together.
Like a marriage.
It really is like a marriage or a long-term relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very funny.
We should mention her. Ariana Bernstein is also a producer and writer of Delusions of Guinevere, but she also plays Guinevere, yes?
Did.
In the film, yeah.
Played it.
Excellent. How do you, I mean, when you're a theater director, I know you walk in and often you, through the process of rehearsal, you have to get the actors not only to perform blocking and physical business and the emotional, psychological character relationships and all that, but they have to learn to love the script and each character for who they are, because even the bad guys don't know they're bad guys. So you have to imbibe them with that. In film, is there an extra challenge because of the retakes and the time span of shooting one scene even? What do you think?
Well, it was really interesting because I also have a theater background.
Yes.
As far as I was an actor for many years, and then I became a theater director and a playwright, and then transitioned into film.
Yes.
And the thing that was really interesting was in theater, like you were saying, getting the actors to love the script and love the characters and their character, that's the same with film.
Yes.
Absolutely, that has to happen.
Yes.
The interesting difference between the two, at least as a director, was in theater, once you train the actor on the journey, mm-hmm. and the actor is trained on the journey and they understand what it is,
mm-hmm.
they do that same journey every night. And yes, it changes because there's the audience is different.
Yes, yes.
The line delivery was a little different, but there's the journey that the character's on.
Yes.
In film, you work with the actor to develop that journey. Absolutely.
Yes.
But then you're shooting it out of order.
Yes.
So
yes.
Part of the interesting, especially with Ariana as Guinevere, because her journey is so dramatic and interesting.
Yes.
Part of my job, so she could be really present doing the acting work, was to come in and whisper to her and say, just remember, this is where we are.
Yes.
You just came off of this. You're feeling this way. And like really helping her. I mean, she did the work as well.
Yes.
But just giving her those little cues, just to remind her of all the work we did when we rehearsed and kind of with had our early conversation.
Exactly.
That was what was really interesting as a director. And then the other thing too is understanding as a director, kind of again coming in from theater, was really getting comfortable with the camera coverage and when a certain actor is on camera versus not on camera and what their performance demands.
Yes.
When they're actually on camera and
yes.
what their job is when they're off camera.
Yes.
But playing to the actor that's on camera.
That's right.
And that's something I really started to develop coming into Guinevere and really honed in on during Guinevere, which is there are times I go to the actor who's been acting in the scene with the other actor.
Yes.
It's not on camera. It's not their coverage is what we say.
Exactly. But it's still action-reaction.
Exactly, but I go whisper in their ear and say, I know this is not what you're going to do when you're on camera,
yes.
but I want you to cause something to happen right now.
Yes.
So show them a knife or, you know, give them something that you may not actually do when you're doing your coverage.
Yes.
That caused her to do this. And I would use the other actors to help the actor on camera do that and get to where they need to go to give them as many tools as possible. Because we're moving in an independent film. You move very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We were shooting 7-8 pages a day, which is breakneck speed.
Yes.
And there's a lot of emotional scenes in Guinevere and a lot of like private emotional moments and things that we really, you know, you would want to spend time to let the actor kind of find that and get there, but we didn't really have that luxury. So
yes.
we would really play with that and use these different kind of tools and tactics to cause things to happen more quickly, and it was obviously safe. I don't want people to think that I'm like manipulating the actor, but really we would all use each other to have that work more quickly and have the actors get there faster.
Sure.
Which was really great, and I was lucky to have an unbelievable cast
mm-hmm.
that were incredibly talented theater actors. So
yes.
They were always present, even if they weren't on camera. Because that's how they're trained. They're trained.
Yes.
You're present. You're always on stage,
exactly.
Right?
Everyone can see you all the time.
Right. And that's how they, even when it wasn't their turn to be on camera, they were just in the scene with the other actor. They were bringing their A game.
Yes.
And it really provided something as far as our ability to move quickly. Because everybody was warmed up. Everybody was ready to go. All systems were firing. So I was really lucky to have a cast that was able to do that as well.
That's a fantastic story. It reminds me of my soap opera days when, you know, in television, well, with film too, everything, the clock is running and the money is ticking and so forth, but we didn't have time. If you took more than three takes to get something right, somebody came out of the booth, and that was not good for someone on the set.
Right.
You know, but it's true. You have to get it, grab it fast, and it does take an excellent cast and an excellent director who knows what to whisper in the ear, as you say. It's beautiful, and I see that work in Delusions of Guinevere, because knowing how you shoot this, you know, I've directed, not filmed, but a number of videos, and I remember once having to say in New York to an actor who was initially supposed to be off camera, but I did in a stack shot with his partner facing the camera, and he was over his shoulder, and he was just acting, you know. I finally said to him, don't act, just listen to her. And when you're really listening, the face responds. The face tells the story, and it just changed everything. I love working on camera. Anyway, back to you. Yes, but you bring up so many wonderful memories. As Guinevere brings up, I wouldn't say not wonderful, but you look at the edgier side, the raw side, perhaps getting lost in the moment in not the way we usually mean that as directors or filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that because there was a message, you didn't overpower the story. I hate when that happens with this is a message film. But because there was a message, the writing took us down a path that was very different, I felt, than what I was used to as a kid watching. This is a movie about how you make a movie, or
right,
how you're in television, or how you have a career. So did you have to fight with yourself to find a balance between let's make this entertainment and edutainment at the same time?
I think, I mean, for me, this story, even though it is an actor's journey to find her version of fame,
yes.
For me, it's a story about anybody that
yes.
gives up their relationships. The character of Guinevere throughout the film consistently cuts up ties with people that love her and that she loved
yes.
in order to pursue this dream.
Yeah.
And I see no difference between the entrepreneur that works 20 hours a day, pardon,
yes.
to launch their company, or the young lawyer who, again, works 20 hours a day to prove themselves in their new firm.
Yes.
At the expense of their relationships, at the expense of their family and their health and their well-being and their mental well-being.
Yes.
For me, that's what this story is about. So when I kept my eyes on that, it became very easy not to be a process. This is how this is how not to become famous.
Yes.
Type story. But really, this is a journey of somebody who is going after something so intensely that she starts doing things that make absolutely no sense at the expense of her relationship.
Yes.
And yet, in the end, she gets what she wants, and she's all alone.
Yes.
And that's the story. I mean, that's something when we talked earlier about, is there, you know, as far as like what in me is in Guinevere
yes.
and vice versa, like that's something I struggle with. Because
yes.
I'm so, like, I can get very, like, full speed ahead working on film and theater projects that I forget to go work out or call my sister or, you know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes like go on vacation,
yes.
things like that. And, you know, I'm not, by no means am I going down the path that Guinevere goes down in the film, but I can really see that in myself where it's like, I have one goal.
Yes.
One mission, tell great stories.
Yes.
And I forget to take care of everything outside of that kind of tunnel sometimes. And my mom is great about reminding me of that. Hey, have you Are you taking care of yourself? Are you have you talked to the family? Have you talked to people? Because I live far away from my family, so I actually have to make the effort to pick up the phone.
Sure.
And go visit. And so that really, to me, is the story that Guinevere tells. And that's why I think it's interesting for people that aren't even in the entertainment business and
yes.
don't want to watch, you know, that aren't just interested in watching like a one girl go down the path of a train wreck,
mm-hmm.
but can really identify with it on some level. Like, where am I doing that in my life? Like, where am I giving up things, giving up important relationships in order to be successful,
yes.
or for money, or for whatever? When we looked at it through that lens, it was pretty easy to keep that writing on point without it going too much into like the message that we're trying to say, or.
Mm-hmm.
Even just looking at it like, here's how not to go after an acting career.
Yes, but here's how not to go after a life, perhaps.
Right, here's a cautionary tale
yes.
of what can happen when you forget what's the most important to you.
Exactly. And we're often surrounded, as Guinevere is, by a group of friends, a panel, if you will. And as you said earlier, we do need to listen and be open and certainly not shut them out, as was a choice. But I guess, as my grandmama used to say, the most important word in the English language is balance. And how do you, for instance, how do you find the balance between that driving goal to create this worthy product and yet make the time to recreate the person who makes all of these creations?
That's something I still struggle with. It's something that I still work on. And for me, it's really about, this sounds very maybe cheesy, but I try to maintain a schedule.
Uh-huh.
And I schedule in those things. I schedule in time to go for a run.
Yes.
Or to call my parents.
Yes.
And say hello. I literally put them into my calendar.
Yes, I do
too. Exactly when I put them in, but simply the act of doing that on a weekly basis, I do it on Sunday night.
Yes.
Reminds me to do these things throughout the week.
That's
really what I do, especially if I'm writing a new script, because when I'm writing a new script, and I'm also responsible about it, where I say, hey, I'm writing a new script, or I'm going into production for 4 weeks.
Yes.
If you don't hear from me, like text or whatever, like just shoot me a note, make sure I'm okay. But like, that's what's happening. I'm also responsible about it too now.
Yes.
I didn't used to be. I would just disappear because I'm writing a script and they're like, are you okay? Are you alive?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm just writing a script. But really just managing my calendar and managing myself inside of that
mm-hmm.
has been really the big thing. And then in this city, I'm lucky. I have a lot of great friends, great filmmaking friends, and I see them a lot around just events and industry things in the city. But
sure.
the, making the time for friends that aren't in the industry has been the other big thing that I've
big
been working
challenge.
On this year.
Yes,
and really saying, okay, great. Like, you have all these great artistic filmmaking theater friends, but you also have all these other friends that
yes.
are not in the industry but are wonderful, and you know, don't forget them. Don't forget to spend time with them, because that's where, for me, the new ideas come from.
Exactly.
The new conversations. It's not just a conversation about what we're working on. It's a conversation about life, or
yes.
how they're doing, or what's going on in their, you know, their world, or my world, or what are we struggling with, things like that, that aren't necessarily about film. And that, for me, is where I start to get my juices flowing.
Sure.
As far as creating new work. Partly it's selfish for me. Like, when I go for a run or do yoga, I do some of that. That's creative work when I'm just out on the trail.
Sure.
So partly it's a little like that balance is important, but it's also a little selfish because I'm like, I have to do this to feed the beast
yes.
that is the creative being.
Exactly.
And so once I realized that and put them together, it became a lot easier for me to proactively make that time. Do what was making me a better artist.
Exactly. And I'm glad I'm not the only person who has to make notes in the calendar to make myself keep an appointment. As my wife says, put it in your calendar, because when it's in the calendar, you always do it. So we've sort of run out of time. This has been an amazing conversation, Joanna Bowser, co-producer, director, and co-writer of Delusions of Guinevere. I wondered, before we go, give us some information on when the film is opening.
Sure. The film opens in Los Angeles on November 14th.
Uh-huh.
and it opens in New York on December 5th.
Yes.
And then it's also going to be available online in December as well, and people can get more information about the film on Facebook at Delusions the Film, on Twitter, Delusions the Movie, or online on the website at delusionsofguinevere.com, and they can sign up to get updates as far as specifics about screenings and things like that.
Fantastic. All right, then. Well, thank you, Joanna, and we wish you all the very best. It sounds like you really, well, I know I've seen the film, so you've got a great film, great product, and
you
are making, really, truly changing the landscape for women in film and pushing indie filmmakers, regardless of their gender. I'd say that's quite a life mission already. Thank you so much for being on the show, and all the best to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. While we initially hesitated on this one, in hindsight, Compliance has grown to become an extraordinary favorite. Compliance is an incredibly shocking story of manipulation of the vulnerable by a cruel, perverted being to do his dirty bidding. We offer a hearty endorsement of this film, qualified by a hearty warning. You will be made uncomfortable. In an extraordinary performance by Ann Dowd, Sondra is a fast food restaurant manager who strives mightily to serve, to achieve her vision of success through her work. When a call comes in from a policeman indicating that her pretty young employee had stolen money, he asks Sondra to bring her into the office for interrogation. A strip search ensues, and then far worse. We may not believe that people can be so easily manipulated. We may not believe that compliance with authority can be so deeply ingrained. We cannot believe. And then we find out the story is true, and it didn't happen just once. Similar cases have been documented over 70 times. This is a horrifying look into the dark side of human nature. Compliance. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Choosing to harvest dignity in life, death, and electoral politics. How conditioned and sold we are by food, beverage, and political TV ads. Every time I vote, I remember the last time my parents were mentally capable of it. Crowded polling places, working voting machines, faces of voters stuck as the fruits of the last political ad they saw, and those motivated to vote against, not for, ballot issues or candidates, all present and accounted for. So what's next? Midterm red wave turns pink, then purple, then 2016 blue. Two-thirds of Americans choose to not vote. MIAs under 40, inheriting the earth, choose by proxy to allow environment raped by Mitch McConnell coal, Boehner's style of immigration, corporatism's denial of climate change science despite supreme superstorms, Takata airbag murder, and the religious right resurrecting same-sex marriage bans. When the day comes we brand each other, I am human too, we'll recognize the truth about media-hyped red versus blue Wall Street excrement and spread it like manure to grow mutual respect and, with the kindness of strangers, save ourselves from TV ads selling food that kills and mind-numbing political shell games stealing collective discernment and individual dignity. In the race against Alzheimer's, I drive my parents to breakfast on weekends, stimulating their memories by playing CDs of old radio comedians. No talk radio twiddle-dee, twiddle-dumb, brainwashed midterm voters, but a journey laughingly transported by car talk. Long before Alzheimer's silenced the incredible humor of Tom Magliozzi, he and younger Ray returned my parents to me, though temporarily, from this disease through time-traveling laughter. For 12 years after diagnosis, Dad's knee-slapping belly laughs and Mom's laughing so hard she cried were detailing by Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers. After our last breakfast out, Mom's touch prevented my turning off the ignition, struggling with funny men on that thing you in-house, the word long lost to her, but it was clear what she wanted was the funny car men played on her television. So thank you, Magliozzi brothers, for all the laughs that connected family meals, life, death, and sometimes even politics with dignity. All too often too close to call without walking in the shoes of the unknown unseen who serve without a voice. Initially, life and dignity are planted together, but separated somewhere on the journey between harvester and supermarket corporate headquarters to our kitchen, home, or fast food dining room tummies. The presumptive American way is being provided a happy meal whenever. But a penny for your thoughts for those who deliver our food, beyond pizza, Chinese, or even growers and their distributors. It's not the multi-million dollar supermarket corporations like Publix, Kroger, and Safeway consumed by profiteering off cheap labor. It's migrant farm workers in the field who deliver us this day our daily bread. There are 200 million migrants working outside of the country in which they were born in order to feed their children and ours, for which they are at best rented guest workers, or arguably the new slaves, not owned, but leased for a penny per pound of hand-picked product. Almost no one chooses the indignity of inequitable gender wages, or Alzheimer's, or brain cancer, like Republican women choose to be anti-ERA ratification, or the under-40 voter choosing not to choose. My mother and father, Ted Kennedy, and Tom Magliozzi chose the last laughs. Brittany Maynard, the last roll call, and Lauren Hill, the first college hoops. Would you choose to pick food for strangers for a piece rate per bucket? Migrant workers in America, the real deliverers feeding the best-fed nation in the world, are paid about 50 cents per 37-pound bucket. The coalition of Immokalee workers chose Publix hunger strike while still harvesting our last meal. And you don't have to be brainwashed to see the injustice in that. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Voice.com website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.